Coaches, welcome back to the CCV Students Podcast. I think that's the official title. I should know.
It is.
But we call it numerous things in-house, and it's usually coach just podcast. The podcast.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a podcast. You know that. You're listening to it. I'm Eric.
I'm
with
Jared.
Me, as always, it's Jared. And we have a special returning guest, one of our first guests ever. Agreed to come back, so we didn't scare him off too bad. Doctor, do you prefer the doctor at the beginning?
No, I do not prefer the doctor.
I'm so sorry. Not doctor, though technically doctor, David Yee, here with us once again.
Happy to be back. Glad to be talking to you guys again.
Thanks for taking time. Yeah, we appreciate it. We were just talking about how we don't bring in doctors very often, so we're just really, really honored to have you here with us, man.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. How long have you been coaching now, too?
Ooh, how long have I been coaching? At CCV since 2013, so that's 8 years, right?
Yeah.
And then I think altogether like 22 years or something like that, I've been working with students in one form or another. So
you're a veteran.
Yeah.
You know what you're talking about.
Ish.
Well, I mean, we're all always
there's
learning
no such
all
thing
stuff.
As know what you're talking about when it comes to teenagers. You know that.
Oh, that is true. They are an ever-changing beast.
Yep.
Today, for this particular episode, we wanted to talk about conflict in the family that students will routinely come to us as coaches with.
Yeah.
And how to navigate that as coaches, because it's sort of a weird, you're a third-party middleman sort of thing. What do we do with that?
Yeah.
But before we, like, just jump right in, what do we do with students? Just to break the ice, because why not? Mm-hmm. I believe you suggested, maybe it's because you're a doctor, you know, we kind of all come from a background where our families handled conflict probably differently than anyone sitting around this table right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that colors what we do as a coach. So I'll just start. Vulnerability, which is my least favorite thing. family, where my parents love each other. They are still happily married after I'm a bad son. A lot of years. I forget how many. We did not do conflict so much. We did a lot of the, like, let's just squash that and keep everything pleasant. And it was not until I married into a different family that I learned not everyone handles conflict that way. And it is absolutely the reason I'm the joke guy. It's just how I learned to handle, oh, this is uncomfortable, crack a joke, move on.
Nice. That's awesome. For me, I probably have a very similar story in that my family, I raised in a Christian home. My parents are still together after a lot of years too. And I didn't see a ton of conflict at home. I didn't have a lot of craziness, and there's no really divorce or any of that as part of my story. I'm really fortunate, and faith was a big part of my household too. I think the big dynamic at work in my household was my dad was very dominant. My dad was the Enneagram 8, very authoritative. What he said went. And my mom is the sweetest lady in the world. She's close to never sinned. She's pretty close to Jesus. And whenever I would get in trouble, my mom's typical response was, I guess you're going to just have to wait until dad gets home.
Hmm. Those are scary words as a kid.
Terrifying.
Nothing makes you want to just melt more than hearing that. So, So anyway.
Yeah. So my experience, very different than both of your experiences. So I come from a family of constant transitions and very little emotional filters on anything, which drives some people nuts. But like, I'm very comfortable around high volumes of emotion because that's kind of my native language. That's where I come from. So family divorced when I was 5 years old. So I don't remember very much of my parents being married before that, but high conflict divorce, lots of back and forth, bickering over custody and money and all those kinds of things. And come from a family where anger was expressed in very verbal and very physical kind of ways, you know, that that physical forms of discipline were the norm. And sometimes that wasn't like intentional, thought out discipline. That was kind of more just reactions, you know. So never really taught restraint or never really taught that gentle kind of keep the peace like mode of things. We were a family, and it's kind of interesting though, because we were a family who we would have it out in very aggressive, very loud ways, and then reconcile very quickly, you know. So you could get into a fist fight, you could get into a big yelling match with someone, and then like by that night be expected to just be okay again. You know what I mean? And sometimes actually were, most of the time actually were okay again. Mm. But in other, like I didn't get until adulthood that was not the normal. That was not everybody's experience of a family life, you know? So very, could be pretty high volume, could be pretty high conflict, and just lots of transitions, different authority figures. Grandparents did a lot of disciplining, different parents, different rules at different households and all those kinds of things. Yeah,
that's very different than our story.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you sharing that. And, you know, when we were thinking about what to talk about for this episode, we were just trying to reflect on this past year and anticipate some of what we might be uncovering at camp this summer about what's been going on in the lives of our students throughout the year. And we just felt like conflict at home with mom and dad or whoever's at home is probably going to surface for a lot of our students. And that's why we want to try to equip you coaches with this podcast. So David, can you kind of help us distinguish between what's a normal type of family conflict that is we're going to see regularly in the lives of our students versus maybe something that's a little bit more concerning?
Sure. Yeah. So conflict is normal. I mean, friction is necessary for movement. Like that's a part of the growth process, you know. And two humans can't spend any significant amount of time with each other without having some level of conflict with each other, which is going to be true for moms and dads, you know, married couples trying to work out raising a family together. Moms and dads are going to have conflict with each other, right? Parents and children are going to have conflict with each other. And especially as kids become teenagers, right? And teenagers, it's a necessary thing to develop your own worldview and to assert a level of independence. This is actually a developmentally appropriate thing, but you can't assert your own independence against an authority figure without some level of conflict happening. So getting used to the fact that conflict is normal, that it's supposed to be there, right? But what you end up trying to figure out is like, what's the intensity? What's the frequency? Is there conflict with safety attached to it, or is it an unsafe kind of level of conflict, you know? So like we were just kind of talking about, like in our different households, I heard my parents fight with each other, you know. I'm not sure if either of you guys have a memory of your parents having arguments with each other, or how that would have been handled. But I remember my parents fighting with each other, you know. And so sometimes like I'll have a teenager talking to me about like listening to their parents fight. And my knee-jerk reaction to that is like, so what? I mean, this is kind of like a normal thing. But then again, that goes back to that kind of self-awareness thing of not all families are the same. And what I used to feel was normal is not necessarily healthy or normal, you know. I want to spend some more time kind of figuring out more about that, you know. So as far as like trying to figure out like what's normal and what's not normal, right? There's not one set of rules that you can really just apply to what's normal family conflict, right? If you got a kid who feels a sense of stress, right, or a sense of anxiety, that parents are going to be disappointed in them because of performing like poorly academically, right? That's normal, right? That's something that nearly every kid experiences. If you're a kid who tends to pull like C's and D's and you're worried that your F is not going to make it up to a D by the end of the semester, you're going to stress about that. If you're a straight A student and you've got that 92 and you're not okay that it's close to being a B, you're going to stress about that. It's on a different spectrum, but it's the same stress, right? Mom getting mad because chores aren't done. Mom getting mad because like grades aren't high enough or something like that, or that you had a bad attitude or something like that. These are all normal things that every kid experiences in some way, shape, or form, right? So we're not so much focused on that part of it as we are focused on like how it's expressed. You know what I mean?
That's great.
Yeah. So I guess when you hear a kid kind of talking about some kind of stress that they're experiencing or some kind of conflict that they're having, the first thing that I would want like a coach to do would be to spend some time just listening and just kind of asking some questions, you know. A good rule of thumb is you want that kid talking 80% of the time and you talking 20% of the time if you can during that conversation. I'm just going to ask some open-ended, like, follow-up kind of things. Tell me more about that. Like, what was that like for you? How did that make you feel, to be cheesy about it? but they get some talking, you know, because if you start getting all lecturey and getting all preaching out about them, then you're going to lose them opening up about that information. And you're just kind of collecting data at that point, you know. That might be all that's necessary is for them to just feel like they're being heard and for them to just like talk about what they experienced, right? But if you start hearing about things like physical violence, or if it seems like this is something that's happening like daily, or if they start complaining about the, like dropping some hints about the amount of alcohol that's involved in some of those conversations, about things being broken or about like that kind of stuff, you know, then that's definitely going to be something that that you want your ears to perk up to, you know, because they're trusting you to be a safe and receptive listener, you know. And they may be trusting you to be a person that takes them seriously when they express something that is very serious to them, you know.
That's right.
We can very unintentionally minimize or dismiss something that to them is a very serious thing, or in the big picture might be a genuinely like critical situation. But we're in such a hurry to not make a big deal about it or to kind of normalize things and not want to stir things up too much that we don't take seriously what it is that they're trying to express to us, you know. So
yeah, and I just want to emphasize, in those moments where you do hear some of those dangerous things, that should be an indicator for every coach to get in contact with your student pastor that same day.
Don't sit on it. Yep. And your SP is like your first, just go there. They'll help you sort through. There may be follow-up conversations, there may be all that, but when you hear any of that stuff or that kind of red or yellow flag stuff, just run it by your SP.
Yep, that's really good. And I think kind of moving forward, how about those situations where, yeah, we don't think the student is in physical danger, but there's conflict in the home, mom and dad have been fighting a lot, or maybe mom and dad are divorced and it's just really difficult, like the student's just having a hard time with it. Like what's some practical things you would recommend coaches do to help students navigate these difficulties at home?
Sure. And it's different whenever, because we're talking about two different things. If a kid is having problems with his parents because of some issue that they're having, that's one kind of conflict, right? But when a kid is experiencing conflict between other family members, between mom and dad, or between mom and stepmom, or some kind of dynamic between the different authority figures, that's a super stressful, super anxiety-provoking position for a kid to be in, you know, because in a lot of ways, they end up having kind of a no-win no matter what they do. It becomes very adaptive for a kid to learn how to be kind of a chameleon. Whatever family I am with at this time, right, I need to say what I need to say to be in alignment with them. You know, whether I'm in a divorced household or I'm in a household that's still together, but there's just a lot of conflict, you know. If I'm in front of mom, then I need to say whatever I need to say to not have conflict with mom. You know, if I'm in front of dad, I need to say whatever I need to say to not have conflict with dad. So to be in the same room with them together can be terrifying, you know, because I got to try to make both these people happy, or I got to be on their side. Or a different kind of dynamic that you might notice is like one parent being alienated from the kids by, you know, the aligned parent, you know. So me and my mom have this really great bond with each other, but dad just doesn't care, you know. Dad's just not involved, or vice versa, you know. And what ends up being really hard is, as a person who's listening, whether as a therapist or as a coach or whatever, is a person who's listening to this conversation, what I don't know is, is this kid telling me what they perceive about what's going on in their household, right? Or is this kid echoing what's been given to them by whatever upset parent or whatever like offended parent is kind of drawing them in and pulling them into taking sides? And what that just kind of does to a kid is this place that is supposed to be their safe place, is supposed to be their refuge, the place where they have, you know, vulnerability and they have like this relational kind of intimacy and this closeness. The safety evaporates immediately, you know, and so now going home becomes a hostile environment, or even if it's not physically violent, or even if there's not a lot of yelling, just that unspoken kind of awkward tension of just, I don't know what to say, you know, or I don't know, how to handle this situation, or kids who parents will take out whatever problems they have with the other parent, like on them, you know what I mean? So there's not like one set of advice to give a kid, or to give a coach when they're talking to a kid in that, other than just, is that be slow to speak, you know, do a lot of listening, use your ears before you use your mouth, because the main thing that they probably want in that moment is to be heard, you know, just have somebody to talk to about what's going on. That's not going to get them chewed out by the other side, you know? And that's one of the beautiful advantages that you have is this outside party, right? Is that I'm not married to their mom and I'm not married to their dad. You know, I'm an outside person in this, right? So I am free to listen to what they have to tell me. And I can just align with that kid without having an agenda on which side that I need to take. And it's something that maybe you have that that any other person in their life does not have, you know?
Yeah. How can you be on their side? You know, you're essentially on the kid's side, not that you're teaming up against the parents. How can you be that safe space that, like, hey, talk to me. I've got your back. And then also navigate that murky waters of, yeah, you know, you need to honor your parents. You need to respect them. You need to, like, that seems like a delicate balance to strike.
Sure, absolutely. And it is. It is a delicate balance to strike. I mean, the first thing is if you're making it your agenda just to listen, right? Well, that's not really taking sides. if I'm just waiting and hearing what they have to say and I'm validating their feelings, even if I don't think that their thinking is very wise, or even if I think that the kid's got a bad attitude or something wrong with the way that they're perceiving it, that's fine. I don't need to agree with all that to listen and validate. You know, and that word validate, it can be misunderstood. Some people might think that if I validate your feelings, that means that I'm agreeing with you or that I'm taking your side, right? All that means is that I acknowledge that you feel the way that you feel, right? And that those feelings deserve to be expressed and heard, right? Mm-hmm. And that's all I'm trying to accomplish in that part of that conversation right there, right? Doing that without trying to take sides. You do kind of want to be careful not to villainize their parents. You know, it's not something that you want to feed into, you know? Parenting is hard. You know, I'm a parent of two teenagers myself, you know. I definitely had some times when I've said some things or done some things that have upset my kids, I'm sure, you know. And if they had a private conversation with somebody that I wasn't around, I'm sure that they would have things to say about that. And some of that's just the normal thing about like being a teenager with your parents, you know. So you want to be careful not to pile on, but doing more collecting information and less... less advice giving, if that makes sense, you know. And this goes back to something that we talk about all the time, you know. Don't be so quick to just jump in and give advice, or to just jump in and make a judgment about a situation. You know, you just listen. Don't try to fix it first. You know, give yourself some time to process what you're hearing before you jump in to try to take sides or to try to give advice on any of that kind of stuff. Yeah,
that's good. What do you think? A student who is living in a divorced household, I mean, this was part of your story. Mm-hmm. What does that student need to hear from you, the coach, the most? Like, what do you need to affirm most in their life based on what they're going through, just dealing with a split household?
Sure. And so if you don't come from that environment, you know what I mean? One thing that might be important to say, and I think that this can apply to a lot of different kind of contexts, is that, hey, I might not know exactly what that's like, what you're going through, right? And I'm not going to pretend like I know. So please, like, tell me more. Help me understand, you know. Don't assume that you can get what that feels like to them, right? There's a lot of pressure Even in really functional, like divorced families, because there is such a thing as couples who separate and figure out how to cooperate functionally with each other to try to do what's in the best interest of their kids. You know, it's really hard to make that work. You know, so and even in functional relationships where they've figured out how to co-parent together, it's still awkward. It's still kind of tense, and it can still be kind of hard sometimes because there's this. This insecurity that comes as a parent to feeling like you're being compared, right? So now imagine that like your own kid has another comparison point that they spend half their time with. Parents can be very insecure when they feel like their authority or when they feel like their ability to parent is challenged or questioned. And I mean, that's one of my biggest fears in life is feeling like I've messed up when it comes to parenting my kid. Can imagine what it would be like to have somebody that I'm being compared to like household versus household every single weekend. That's tough. You know, that's a really tough situation to be in as a parent and as a kid, you know. I forgot what the original question was. Like,
so what do you need to affirm?
So this is going to sound super cheesy. That kid needs to hear, right, that their parents' divorce was not their fault, right? And they will probably tell you, I know. Right. They'll probably tell you, yes, six people have told me that before. My mom told me that when they got the divorce. My dad told me that when they got the divorce, that it wasn't because of us, right? But on a level that goes below what makes logical sense, right? On a more heart level, on a limbic level, it still needs to be reaffirmed over and over again that you were not the cause of this family being broken up, right? You are still loved. You are still wanted. Which there may be some family situations that you're talking to that do not communicate that this is not your fault or that you are still loved or that you are still wanted. There are plenty of kids that you might come in contact who have been either directly or indirectly been given the message that you are the stressful burden that has made my life unhappy. You know, you are the baggage that I'm stuck with from my past regrets or something like that. And that's really sad. I mean, there's nothing that you can do in that brief moment that can take all that away, you know. But at the end of the day, every kid wants to know, you know, it's not my fault. I'm still loved. I'm still wanted, you know. And you have to kind of know that kid and kind of know what it is that fuels them and makes them tick. You can't promise that that's the way that their parents feel, you know, but you can promise that the divorce wasn't their fault, you know. You can promise that they are lovable, right? And that they are worthy of that. But I think that's not just in divorced families. I think that goes down to the core of every single one of us that we just want to know that we belong. We want to know that we're lovable. We want to know that we're not a failure at life. And divorce kind of has a way of highlighting all those fears and like handing them right to you and saying, are you sure that this isn't all your fault? Because they say it's not, but so even though they may have heard that message over and over again, I just feel like it's just something that you can't say enough. You know, it's not your fault. You know, you're still lovable. You know, you're still wanted. I don't care how many times you have to echo it. Just be ridiculous. Echo it over and over again. Because if that's the message that they can't get out of their head, then we're doing pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
Would you say advice is the same or similar for thinking of 2020 and where our students are at? And there's probably a pile of students in a still more or less intact family, but you know, tensions are through the roof right now. Like everyone's just fighting and arguing. They're coming to you because they're worried about that. They hear their parents yelling at each other every night. Like, do you give them the same kind of advice?
Sure. I mean, and there is something about 2020, especially when it came to work from home situations and at home school kind of situations, where families that had problems before, they didn't have the amount of like the frequency of interactions that would bring them to the surface. You know what I mean? So things that were small problems were very, very much highlighted because of just the intensity of conflict. And I think that's true for all of us, that even if you have like a best friend or something like that, if I spend too much time with him, I get sick of him. You know what I mean? And it's just like, I just want you to leave me alone for a second. I love you, but go away kind of thing. And if you think about this environment where these people that you love, right, but none of them are perfect. We all have our personality quirks. And because we're in the same family, our personality quirks probably like amplify each other, you know? And so frictions that could be easily ignored or frictions that just didn't come up all that often, they came up more frequently because of just that frequency of contact and all those kinds of things. So as far as advice for that, for again, I go back to the very first thing is stop trying to analyze them, stop trying to give them advice. First, just take some time to hear them out, you know, because if they just need someone to talk to that they can say like, yeah, mom and dad were having this fight, or like ever since I started doing like at home school, my mom is like over my shoulder, or my dad's like checking the progress bar on my school thing like every 5 minutes or something like that. Or siblings are just going crazy. We just can't get out of each other's hair. Just listen, validate, do as much of that as you possibly can. Sometimes you can help them do some problem solving kinds of things. You know, sometimes there's some attitude things that they just need to be like pointed out and have those things kind of checked. There is some room for that, you know, that they need to be given that kind of feedback. But then as far as like, what do kids need to hear? Depending on the family, empowering that kid to go and have those conversations with their parents, you know, that's something that I would really encourage, especially if I knew the family. Like, hey, if your parents are having conversations that scare you, or if your parents are having a lot of intense expressed emotions and that upsets you, if you feel like it's a safe thing to do, ask them about it. Like, go talk to your mom, go talk to your dad. It'll make them uncomfortable. It will very much make their parents uncomfortable, right? but in the end, that's a healthy, assertive kind of thing to do. I notice this tension going on in our relationship, right? Whether it's a parent-child relationship or a parent-parent relationship. Hey, I notice you and mom. I notice you and dad. Like, you're going into the bedroom and you're shutting the door for longer periods of time. And I just want to know, are we okay? You know what I mean? Is there anything that's going on that I can help with? You know, I just wanted to let you know that this makes me feel uncomfortable and this makes me feel scared so that you know how this is all affecting me. Kind of giving them that permission to have those conversations, because at the end of the day, as much as I said family conflict is a normal thing that everybody has, right? We want people to have healthy, assertive ways of expressing family conflict. Like, friction is going to happen. There are healthy ways to have friction. And so assertiveness, which scares parents sometimes when you try to teach their teenagers how to be more assertive, right? but that's actually what we want our teenagers to do. We don't want them to be aggressive. We don't want them to be passive. We don't want them to be passive aggressive, you know? So we want to teach our teenagers to be assertive. So that means if I have a problem with you, or if I'm stressed out about you, or if something's going on that's scaring me, I'm going to have a one-to-one face-to-face conversation where I express that directly and intentionally and vulnerably. And I'm going to trust that this other person is going to receive that and validate my feelings and work towards a solution that's healthy for everybody, you know? So if there's anything you could do to empower a kid to have those kind of conversations with their parents, I'd say that's advice all of us could use, you know, is to learn how to do that more often.
Yeah. I could have used that advice for sure.
I could use that advice now sometimes.
As we wrap up today, David, I was kind of thinking about this question. Would you maybe speak to how conflict in the home might impact a student's faith?
Yeah. That's
I know I sprung that one on you.
No. That's a beautiful question, though, because on a couple different levels. One, if you wanted to get like really deep on it, a lot of times the image that we have of God the Father is built on this template of how we perceive our Father, right? And for some people, that's this beautiful thing where we have this loving relationship with our fathers. And so seeing God as this loving Father, it translates. But for other people, it doesn't always translate. You know, if I haven't perceived my father or I haven't seen how my father treats people to be something that feels safe or feels loving or feels affirming, then it's really hard to see God that way. So that can be one of the big impacts, you know. Another thing that can be a huge impact of that is that faith is most often transmitted through these kind of family lines, You know, very rarely does a person come to their faith just through this purely logical, I read the Bible and it said this, so I believed it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Most of the time, faith is passed on from person to person, you know. So if faith was a part of the family structure beforehand, right, and then the family goes through a transition or it goes through a separation or something like that, well, there's a lot that that could mean. Now mom and dad might not make intentional efforts to take the same stances on things. You know, now mom might go to one church and dad might go to a different church, right? Or even very practical kind of simple things where since now I live in this split household, I only get to come to youth group 50% of the time, which means I don't really feel like I'm a part of it consistently, right? Yep. Simple kinds of things like that, right? And sometimes it'll come down to mom and dad will start having very different views on things and they'll get mixed messages about things, you know. And that can be really hard to wrestle with because then you have one parent sometimes using faith as a way to condemn the other parent. It's like, well, see, I'm being more faithful than them, so I'm the good parent here. You know, you should listen to me and not your father or not your mother or something like that. And so as soon as mom and dad start dividing on this particular issue, it can become this scary kind of ground, you know, and just like what we were talking about before where whatever parent I'm in front of, like that's the one that I want to kind of align with, you know, I feel kind of in between these things, but now I'm supposed to be doing that based off of faith, you know, so if I don't condemn my mother for asking for a divorce or if I don't hate my father for not taking me to church or something like that, then now I'm like betraying the other parent and it's this huge impossible tension for a kid to resolve, you know. So as far as like what advice do you give a person in that kind of situation? One, you try to help them to understand that even though like you want to respect your parents and you want to honor your mother and your father, right? That they got to work on their own relationship with God, right? That can't just be something that's handed to them by their family, right? And that the love that they receive from the Father and that the love that they receive from the Holy Spirit is different than that. You know, that it's not based on those family relationships. It's a different kind of love that comes from a different source, you know. But holding on to that and really feeling that, it can really be impacted by those family transitions or those family separations for sure.
Yeah. Man, that is, I feel like we've covered a lot of good ground and there's, like we've somehow only scratched the surface.
Yeah.
But I'll throw back to you for one last thing. If there's something that kind of blankets all of this, like one thing a coach can just keep in the back of their mind as they're talking to their students, what is that thing?
Well, the same thing that you'll hear me say over and over and over again is be the safe person for them to talk to. You know what I mean? Listen, 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 listen. Validate. Let them talk. Get them to say as much more as they can, right? In the immediate moment, that's going to meet their need the best, like feeling like they've been emotionally validated, feeling like they've been heard. And in the long term, knowing that they had a person who understood them, who heard them and was there for them, not on either side or not taking sides in that, that has a huge long-term impact on them. And kind of going back to what we were talking about in faith, you know, this is a relationship who can show them what the love of the Father looks like, separate from the way that those family relationships that have become ruptured and become damaged, you know. And so you get this really powerful way to be a very beautiful and very important voice in their life without having to take sides or without having to solve a problem, just by being a good listener and just by like holding true to your own values on how you care for that particular kid. Yeah.
Yeah. Well said. Yeah. Dr. David Yee, thank you so much for hanging out with us on the podcast. Coaches, we are going to release a bonus episode again with Dr. Yee next week. 1 week from today, we're releasing a brand new episode, bonus, talking about depression.
That sounds exciting.
That's the worst teaser ever.
That is.
Yeah. Hey, come back. We're going to talk about depression.
Yes. So if you're not already depressed, give us a week and yep. We'll depress you.
Yep. What's the difference between depression and anxiety? I think that's a big question that some of us I don't even know if I have a great answer for that off the top of my head. So this is one that I'd encourage you to jump back on for next week. And in the meantime, just remember, coaches, you are so valued and so appreciated by your church. We know that you taking time to listen to these episodes means you are paying attention to your growth as a leader and as a disciple maker. So we know when the coach gets better, the whole student ministry gets better. See you next time.